After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Us seeing the disparity in the educational system, us living, you know, in a certain neighborhood and seeing, you know, the school that all of our friends from our neighborhood went to, and seeing how they really didn't have any enrichment activities and they weren't really set up for success. You know, we went to a private school and, you know, we just saw, you know, that we were exposed to like computers at a young age. You know, we got to go camping and a lot of other things that kind of increases our scope. So I think one of the things that we wanted to do with our programs was, besides the yoga and the meditation, was, you know, provide enrichment activities to let our kids know that there is other things to, you know, entertain themselves and to kind of, you know, align themselves with.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Metta Hour podcast with Sharon Salzberg. I'm Lily Cushman. I produce this podcast. And today we are coming to you with our final episode of the real life series we've been airing here on the podcast for the past few months. It's always a delight to have this format of the podcast as a way to just explore Sharon's writing and her books more deeply. And today's episode feels like kind of a perfect ending to that, as Sharon is in conversation with Andres Gonzalez, Ali Smith, and Otman Smith. You've most definitely heard of these three brilliant men. They've been on the podcast numerous times before. They are the co-founders of the Holistic Life Foundation. And the other place that you might have seen them is the Living an Authentic Life Summit, which is actually where this recording is from. And the guys each did some of the interviews as part of the summit. So it's a real treat to close the conversation today with their contributions and their insights. They do really such incredible work bringing mindfulness into underserved communities. And so they're really putting these tools in what feels like the front lines of America and offering tools both to underserved kids, but also a lot of caregivers, educators. So they feel like the perfect way to close out the Real Life series. Before we get to the episode, if you haven't heard, one of Sharon's books is being re-released this month, Love Your Enemies, which was co-authored with Robert Thurman, who is the founder of Tibet House and Menlo Mountain Spa. And this book originally came out a decade ago. This is the 10-year anniversary edition with new introductions, both by Sharon and Bob. And we're just happy to put this book kind of back out into the world at a time that in some ways feels more appropriate than when it was originally released, because of how polarized the world really is right now, and as we start to gear up for another election. So, Love Your Enemies, How to Break the Anger Habit and Be a Whole Lot Happier, So you can go to Sharon's website, and there are all kinds of links there to get yourself a copy. So let's get to today's episode. This is the final episode of the Real Life series. Sharon Salzberg and Andres Gonzalez, Ali Smith, and Otman Smith. Here we go.
Welcome back to the summit. I'm Sharon Salzberg, and I'm so happy to welcome my good friends from the Holistic Life Foundation, Andres Gonzalez, and brothers Ali and Otman Smith. Together, Andy, Ali, and Otman founded the Holistic Life Foundation, a nonprofit organization bringing yoga, meditation, and breathwork to thousands of at-risk kids in Baltimore schools since 2001. Their work has received wide national attention due to their remarkable results in public schools, where suspension rates plummet and graduation rates skyrocket. Outside of their work at the Holistic Life Foundation, Ali, Otman, and Andy also teach to diverse populations around the world, including drug treatment centers, mental crisis facilities, homeless shelters, as well as yoga, wellness, and mindfulness festivals. Their first book, Let Your Light Shine, How Mindfulness Can Empower Children and Rebuild Communities, was published last October by Penguin Random House. Hello, welcome. I mean, these three great people have been conducting a bunch of interviews for this summit, which I'm just so grateful for, and is terrific, you know. And for people to get to meet you a little more, and for you to meet some of the people who are guests, and everyone's just hanging out together for change. It's really nice.
Yeah, thank you for having us on here. We really appreciate it, and thanks for believing in us enough to interview, you know, some of the leaders in, you know, the contemplative field. It's been awesome connecting with these people and, you know, learning more about them. So, you know, thank you, and, you know, thank all the other presenters.
Yeah, well, it's great. And today I'm getting to interview you, and we're going to talk about expansion, where we feel most open, expansive, connected, and how to enhance that. So, of course, that brings us to love and compassion. When I think about all of that, I think of you three, really. I think of your incredible work in Baltimore and beyond, but particularly in Baltimore. So take me back to your beginnings there, to your beloved mentor, and how you found the path that you're on now.
So I'd say the path found us, Sharon. I don't think we really had a choice. We were kind of just like, this is what it is. And we were born into it, with our parents being into the practice. Our godfather, who became our teacher, was into the practice. So it was just like one of those things. It was normal growing up just to, you know, like walk downstairs to watch Saturday morning cartoons and see our dad in the headstand in the middle of the living room. Or like, you know, our dad wake us up before school to meditate. Or going to a church where the Sunday school was in the basement, there was incense and crystals all over the place, and they were talking about the commonality in all religious practices. So I think the path was there. But then, you know, like, I feel like as life goes on, particularly things that your parents introduce you to, you kind of stray away from. But those seeds are planted. And then, you know, I'd say life kicks your butt a little bit. And then you start to figure out what's real and what were the things that you need to go back to. So I think that was a part of it. I know what got me back on the path. I remember having a conversation with our teacher, Uncle Will, about this. I don't know, just maybe a couple of years before he transitioned, maybe a year before he transitioned, was one of me and Otman's best friends, like, dying of cancer while he was in his senior year of high school. And it was one of those things where he was like one of the greatest people that we had ever met, like very, very humble. Like, no, he wasn't humble. Very good guy. He was very flashy, but he was very good guy. He would spend his time on the weekends, like volunteering, when the rest of us were just looking to hang out. He was at church every Sunday, was friend to everybody. And I think just watching him slowly deteriorate and like just transition, like at such a young age, was like one of those things like, all right, something's not making sense here. Like and I was at a point we were kind of out of our yogic practice, and we were, I'd say more on the Christian side of things, where it was like, you know, like our mom would take us to church. So it was more of a, you know, like you're born, you die, you go to heaven or hell type of situation. And it just didn't make sense to me that that he was taken away so early. He was such a beautiful soul. And I think that was what got me back on the path of just trying to figure out what was going on. And a lot of things happened. And a lot of things led us there. I think graduating from college and trying to figure out what we're going to do with our lives kind of got us even deeper in the path. And Uncle Will was the one that like put us on the path, like 2 feet solidly on him. He's like, okay, boom, here it is. Now it's up to you to walk it. I'm going to be here to support you and like let you know when you're veering off. But you know, you're on the path and you got to walk it.
So my Uncle Will was your godfather. Is that right?
Yes. Our dad's best friend.
And he was your teacher.
Yes, he was. We like to label him. I can't take credit for this. Ali came up with the phrase. He coined the phrase. He's like the Samuel Jackson of teaching spirituality, because he uses a lot of profanity in getting his point across. He's, you know, he's talking about the light, but he's still, you know, Sam Jackson's it up. You know what I mean? But, you know, he was a big lover. You know, he always talked to us, you know, about, you know, being love and trying to instill, make people love themselves, you know, let them see why, tap them into their light, get them into meditating and, you know, help them develop, I guess, their inner light, you know, so they are, I guess, reliant just, you know, on the love within themselves and not looking for it outside of them, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot of sense. So is love the predominant quality of expansion that you think about?
Yeah, I mean, I would say so. I think, you know, Uncle Will started with a lot of the mat-based stuff. So a lot of the asanas and the breath work with us and the meditations and stuff like that and mudras and mantras. And I would say by the end of it all, you know, last few years or even last like 7-8 years, all we talked about was love and oneness and unity and how we could spread that throughout the world. You know, we always say love is the most powerful force in the universe and it's that uniting force as well. So it's interesting to call it as expansive because sometimes I see expansion as pushing out, whereas that love also is bringing together. But certainly I think that's a big part of who we are is, you know, expanding with love and embodying love where we go and reminding individuals of that light within them that Atma was talking about and their full capacity and that they do have the ability to manage the ups and downs the world is throwing at them all the time. And love is one of those things that really, really can make it a little easier if you start being loving, seeing love in all things, in your words, your mm-hmm. thoughts, your actions. You know, all the time. So we're big love people. L-O-V-E. So you hear us say it all the time. You know what I mean? So I would say certainly that, especially with Holistic Life Foundation and even with the work that Ali and Atma are doing with the Involution Group, that a lot of what we do is based on love and spreading that love throughout the world.
Yeah, and Sharon, I think one thing that Uncle Will used to always talk about as far as like expansion was like knowledge. You know what I mean? Like he would always talk, I mean, because like people don't, he would always say that people were ignorant of their light. You know what I mean? And not that they were like dumb, but they were just ignoring it. So it was like, there's all this universe worth of information inside of each and every one of us that people don't tap into or don't know how to tap into. And I think that is what like really causes the expansion is like, that knowledge. Cause I mean, like a lot of people are kind of stuck in like their, you know, their body and their thoughts. And that's the end of it. You know what I mean? And that can be very limiting. I mean, cause you know, your thoughts are kicking your butt, your body's like here for like the blink of an eye, but your soul's infinite. So like if you can get the knowledge of that, I think that starts to expand your entire universe and like your entire connection and your entire interaction and your capacity to love.
Ali, when you just said that, it just popped in my head when we used to always go to Uncle Will's and you know, as far as expansion, we used to always be like, yo, do you want to come out to this bar, to this restaurant? He was like, man, why do I have to go anywhere? I have the whole universe inside of me. So thinking about expansion again, that could be like meditation or, you know, different contemplative practices, because it does take you to deeper parts of yourself, more subtle parts of yourself, which is another way that is expansive, you know, and it's continuous, and you know, you can never get to the end of that expansion. And you know, I think that you know, that's one thing that pops in my mind, him talking about like the fact he doesn't really need to go anywhere because the universe is inside of him, is, you know, the most expansive idea that I can, you know, come up with.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in some schools of Buddhism, they emphasize the problem more than anything. You know, maybe that's because that's what's realistic for a lot of people. You know, let's not talk about freedom nearly as much as we talk about what it's like when you wake up in the morning and you feel helpless and you feel despairing. You know, let's talk about that. But it's sort of in that light that we talk about contraction, and it's a number of different issues, actually. One is because if you're in pain, let's start with acknowledging it instead of trying to pretend it's not there. It doesn't mean that's all that you are. You know, if it does feel like it's all that you are, then that's bad too. You know, that's just hopelessness. But let's start with facing it and acknowledging it and then seeing what to do about it, which doesn't mean trying to destroy our painful states, but holding them differently. And that's where we start to expand, you know, because being locked into those states of greed and shame and all of those fear, things like that, we're so shut down, and everything, body, mind, spirit, is just so contracted and uptight, you know, that it's only when we deal differently with those states that we begin to get this sense of like, oh. And I think of it often, and some descriptions are like you're in a locked, tiny little dark room, and then something happens, so the door swings open. And you don't know what's out there, but suddenly it's like there's a bigger world. There's so much more possible options than I ever imagined before. And my favorite example of that always is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland, there's in the Bruce Springsteen exhibit, there's a letter he wrote on the occasion of Bob Dylan's induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Bruce Springsteen wrote about the first time he ever heard Bob Dylan's music. And he was about, I think he was 15 maybe. He was riding in the car with his mother, and a song came over the radio by Bob Dylan. And Bruce Springsteen wrote, "It was like a giant boot came down and kicked open the door of my mind."
Wow.
And he said, and then my mother said, "That man can't sing." You know, so it's not like we're all going to get opened up by the same thing. But I think we know those moments through art, through music, through meeting a great being, you know, through falling in love. I mean, all kinds of moments where you just go, oh, it's a bigger world.
Interesting. While you're describing it and you're talking about like being like kind of huddled in, I picture like how sometimes when you see people and you can tell that they're just not in a comfortable place, you can tell by like their physical body too, how they're like hunched over and they're almost like in a shell. Whereas someone, when they're feeling comfortable where they're at, they're open and their heart's open. And it's like they're expanding throughout the entire world. And for some reason that I envision someone sitting there like hunched over, like, ugh, I don't feel comfortable in this area, compared to someone who's like, ah, love, I'm in love. Let the love shine from my heart.
Yeah.
Amazing to think of. Yeah.
So, Ali and Atman, I'm curious, when you first met Uncle Will, clearly you were children, and did you ever just think, that guy's so weird, you know? I'm like the weirdest godfather going.
Yeah, we definitely did. I remember just one of the stories that pops up in my mind is, you know, he's such a fun dude. He's so charismatic. He's hilarious. So people always wanted to be around him. And, you know, he knew that he wanted to teach us yoga, and, you know, he always exposed us to different ways, herbs and different teas and stuff like that could heal us up. And we were over there drinking beer and watching, you know, a sporting event. And he was, you know, just talking. We were all talking trash about, you know, who we thought was going to win. And, you know, he would turn to us while we were just joking and, you know, and all of, you know, the performances of people playing basketball. And he'd be like, "Man, you know, we're putting these toxins in our body. You know, to get those toxins out your body, you could just do the breath of fire." And he would just, stop what he's doing, close his eyes, and do this practice where you're breathing 3 breaths per second. And like, and Ali and I would just look at each other and look at him and be like, man, this dude is crazy. And we would just leave, you know? So yeah, it was definitely times we were like, who is this guy? But I don't think we were ready for him at the time when he was trying to present us with all the different books and information and techniques when he, you know, first started dropping. But like, you know, when we met Andy in college, we all were like interested, looking for, you know, what more there was to this world. And, you know, all the books would always say the answers within, the answers within. Our teacher actually had a method of taking us in.
Yeah. And I think one of the things about Uncle Will that he appreciated about us was that we were just as weird as he was. You know what I mean? Because like, I mean, he had been trying to push these practices on people for decades. You know what I mean? Like, there's stories about him teaching our dad's friend, him and our dad's friends, like it was like Melvin Watkins and Wally. Like, they would go over there and they would do these practices, and he would run them off. Like, they'd be like, this is just not for me. And I think it was just so, like, it brought him so much joy that we were just as weird as him. Like, we were over there, like, with notebooks, taking notes on what he's saying. We're going and practicing this stuff. Like, I distinctly remember one day we're over there. Like, he would always say, you got to be a scientist. You got to be a scientist. You got to experiment. And I distinctly remember one day we were over there and it was a snowstorm. And we had run out of Heineken's. He was like, Ollie, why don't you walk to the store and get some Heineken's? So literally it's a snowstorm. I leave my jacket in his house and I have a t-shirt and I'm walking out the door. He's like, what are you doing? He was like, well, I was like, look, man, you told me Ujjayi can keep my body temperature up. So I'm just going to walk to the store and I'm going to do Ujjayi the whole way there and the whole way back and see if it keeps me warm. And like, it cracked him up. And he was like, I think it made him happy to see like there was someone that was actually willing to take the night, not just take his word for it and just like, okay, yeah, this stuff is true, but like, I'm going to prove this to myself to make sure that it works. And I think he really, really loved the fact that like we were one big weird family.
Ali hasn't worn a winter jacket since then either. It's incredible.
Ujjayi. I wasn't even sure if it was going to work, but I was like, well, this is the perfect time to try this. Like, literal snowstorm. Like, just like, I remember the drive home was pretty treacherous. That was the time when Grady ate all of our stuff in the basement. That was that same time. Like, my dog ate all of our snowstorm supplies. So just walking the store and walking back, just doing Ujjayi, not really caring about who was around me or who saw me. And it worked. It kept me warm.
I don't know if everyone has quite the right visual for that, but is that like bellows breath? Is that?
It's Ujjayi is like the breath where you partially close your glottis. So it's like that. You inhale, you make the sound, you hold it, you lock your chin to your chest as long as you can, and you bring it back up, then you push it all out audibly too. So there's different ways to do it. Like, sometimes people use different nostrils and stuff, but it's just the basic, the Ujjayi breath is the one where you partially close your glottis. It's an audible inhale and exhale.
Well, it seems to me that there are different elements, like, to that, say, the Bruce Springsteen moment, you know, there's that flash where suddenly you do think things can be different or they can sound that way, or, you know, look at this. This is something I never thought of. And it seems to be true. And, you know, so there's that kind of opening and expansiveness that's the inspiration. And then there's the question of, for me, I would say methodologies, techniques to make it stable, you know, because you don't just want to go around your whole life admiring Bob Dylan. You want to see what's possible for you, you know. So then you try out that kind of breath, or you seek knowledge about something, or you experiment, or you meditate, you know, you do yoga, or you do something so that it really becomes your own, you know, and not just a question of kind of admiring someone else. And so I'm very into technique, and that means cultivation, you know, that there are ways of just strengthening these qualities. And I just read Real Life, the book, aloud, the whole book for the audio version. And do you have an audio version of your book, by the way?
Yeah.
Did you read it, you guys?
Yeah, we did in three parts. Yes, all three of us read it.
And I definitely didn't think it was as hard as it was. But, you know, when you're at home reading, you can like skip a word or mess a word up, but you have to read it word for word. So it was definitely a lot harder than I thought it was.
No, it's hard. I kept saying, how do you pronounce that? You know, mm-hmm. And the poor.
I remember the first time you remember you talking to us about that when you had done it, and you were like, it was not as easy as I thought. Just prepare yourselves. And I remember being in the studio thinking, like, hearing your voice and be like, she wasn't playing around. This is not as easy as
I thought. It's so easy. But, you know, I just read it very, very recently. And so one of the passages that I really liked a lot, although I kept thinking, why do I write such long sentences? Like, I can't breathe and you know, say this out loud, but I'm trying. I write about how there are kinds of plants that will survive with very little attention, like even sort of neglect. Spider plants, aloe vera, ZZ plants, many succulents. But if you decide to give these plants some attention, they won't just survive, they can actually flourish. So that makes me think of like the kids, for example, amongst the many populations that you work with, who maybe have it in them to survive some really difficult circumstances, but is a way of paying attention to them and helping them develop some tools so that they can really flourish in a whole other way. So I wonder if you could talk about that.
Yeah, I think it's amazing what having a caring adult that's present with you can do for the way that your outlook on the world and how you feel about yourself and your ability to achieve. You know, a lot of the kids we work with didn't have anyone to be accountable for because, like, you know, people were busy in their life. People might not have been present and people might not have really cared, but they knew that we cared about them. They knew we were going to be present. They knew that we loved. They genuinely knew that we loved them without saying, I love you, but they could see how we treated them, that we really loved them. And I think that helped them to strive for more and like and having someone to let down is a real thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you have no one to let down, then you can run around and do whatever you want to do. But if you have someone to let down, then you kind of have to like live a certain type of life. And I think it was then once they didn't want to let us down, they didn't want to let themselves down. So I think it was, you know, seeing that we love them and appreciating that, but then starting to love themselves and not wanting to let themselves down. But I think that's where it clicks, is when they start to love themselves and then they start to see that like, yeah, I'm worthy of anything out here. Like I'm connected to more than just my physical environment. You know, like this is all tangible for me because of how much I care about myself and how much I don't want to let myself down. So I think having those caring and also consistency, I think consistency is the other key because, you know, a lot of the kids we work with have adults that are kind of transient in their life and someone they might connect to that might disappear. But one of our students just texted us a picture of him in his fifth grade graduation. And this was at like 2002. I mean, he's an adult now working for us. Like he's got kids of his own, like he's got a family, you know what I mean? Like, but he was at his grandfather's house and found pictures of the three of us with him when he's in fifth grade with the biggest smile on his face and just thanking us in a text message for what we brought to his life.
And then also to build off of what the question that you asked and Ali commented on, you know, I think, you know, seeing the disparity in the educational system, us living, you know, in a certain neighborhood and seeing, you know, the school that all of our friends from our neighborhood went to and seeing how they really didn't have any enrichment activities and they weren't really set up for success. You know, we went to a private school and, you know, we just saw, you know, that we were exposed to like computers at a young age. You know, we got to go camping and a lot of other things that kind of increases our scope. So I think one of the things that we wanted to do with our programs was, besides the yoga and the meditation, was, you know, provide enrichment activities to let our kids know that there is other things to, you know, entertain themselves and to kind of, you know, align themselves with than just what they see in their, you know, one block radius, which they are known to like just venture out into. And, you know, that's just like, you know, putting a plant in a bigger pot. You know, like if it has a bigger pot, it has more room to grow. Just like, you know, with the pot, our kids had more room to grow because, you know, our kids were achieving at a lot higher level at in high school with their grades. You know, they all graduated from school on time, if not early. None of them were locked up. You know, one of them, you know, wanted to be a photographer. and, you know, actually went to Maryland Institute College of the Arts and went over to China, shot a documentary. One of our kids went, you know, to a college in South Carolina, won a lacrosse championship. So it's like our kids kind of broke all of the ceilings that was kind of like saying what they needed to be in life. And they've broke through it, and they're all achieving at a very high level. A lot of them came through our program and worked for us after college or after high school, but now they're on to bigger and better things, you know, supporting their families and, you know, whatever they chose, whatever field they chose to work in. But, you know, it's beautiful seeing them grow.
So do you get into the classroom anymore, or you just kind of set it up so that other people are doing that kind of work?
Only when we travel, we get to teach. That's why, that's personally why I like to travel so much, because we actually get to teach. But in Baltimore, you know, we got it. Like it's gotten a lot bigger than the three of us. Like it was when we first started, we could actually do things. Like we actually have to run the organization and manage and train and all those things. So, and then also to employ the people that have come through our programs and the people that come through our workforce development program. To keep them employed, we have to kind of step away from teaching in Baltimore, which, you know, we miss, but we understand that we serve more people this way.
Someone wants to define trauma as being frozen, an incident, an experience, or sometimes it's chronic. It's like the steady erosion of belief in yourself, you know, over time because of poverty or some other condition. And that definition makes some sense to me. You know, it's like, as in contrast to flow or an ability to move or change or believe in change, it's just like lockdown, energetically in other ways too. So, and you know, clearly some number of the kids or adults that you work with are really experiencing a lot of trauma in the systems in which they're living. And so one of the gifts I think you have given is that sense of possibility in the belief in change. Things can be different. You know, your life can look different. I was watching something on YouTube just for wasting my precious human birth, as the Tibetans would say, rather than doing something constructive. And this mom was talking to her infant child who was in an intensive care, you know, neonatal intensive care. They were born, I think it was twins, were born quite prematurely, and they were in incubators and getting treatment. And then they were released, you know, eventually back into the home. And she said, and, you know, we kept saying to them, this is not your life. You know, we have a home. You'll see sunlight. It's not just these sort of artificial lights. You'll see, you know, there's fresh air. There's food, not just down a tube. And I thought it was so beautiful, you know, and she just kept saying, this is not your life. You know, this is something you have to get through. But you have a life and it has sunlight. You know, it has so much. I think of the three of you and your work is just like that.
I think a lot of what you said resonated with me because a lot of the kids that we work with before we start with them, they find themselves feeling trapped in like a hopeless and kind of helpless situation in a neighborhood with no resources and not a lot of not a lot of light shining in it. You know what I mean? It's just kind of it can be a very dark place to grow up in some of the underserved communities in Baltimore and the other places that we serve. So I think giving people like a source of like seeing themselves as a resource, you know what I mean? Like having that inner resource of like a place you can go to where there's peace, where there's love, where there's connection, like despite all the chaos around them, I think is a beautiful gift for anyone to get. But particularly if you don't have the resources to kind of get out of your neighborhood, like, you know what I mean? Like most of the kids we work with, they can't afford to go to a retreat center. They can't afford to go on vacation. So I'm physically stuck here. And if mentally and spiritually and energetically I was stuck here too, this would be a dismal existence. But I think connecting them to their true self and connecting them to something bigger than them does start to open things up, like you said, like expansion, like you see that this isn't all there is, like the mom talking to the kids, like yeah, there's more for you, like this is where you are now, but there's more for you out there if you get through this, and like we help we're giving the kids the tools to get through this so they can go and flourish in life and not just kind of scrape their way through and survive it.
Thank you. It's beautiful. I'm curious if you could tell some story about like one of the kids.
I think this is one of those moments where I think we really realized the work we were doing was making such a great impact, where we had a young lady who had a tough upbringing, and she got bullied because of, you know, clothes she wore, the stuff she had. And she was able to defend herself pretty easily because her brother taught her some, you know, some boxing skills. And so even though she would get bullied, she would handle her own. And so what, she was probably in fifth grade then, and someone was saying something to her, talking smack, and she pins him up against the locker room, and she could tell she's ready to cock back and hit her. And like, we like go around the corner with the principal. So the principal witnesses this too, which I think was a very, enlightening moment for her to see that, be like, wow, this is really working. So, you know, Nene kind of looks at the girl and looks at us, looks at the girl and was like, you lucky I meditate, drops her, and then sits down and starts breathing. You know, it's one of those things. It's one of those like moments where you're like, holy, like, wow. Like, did that just happen? You know, like, and you know, it's, you know, this stuff's working, you know what I mean? But it's great to see it in action and to witness it when they're under adverse situations and they're going through, you know, the struggles that they go through in life. And I think it just speaks volumes to like what you were saying, how when you nurture something and you give it the things it needs, you know, like plants need water and sunlight, the nutrients in the dirt, you know, humans oftentimes need these techniques that we're sharing with people, whether it's the breath, a meditation, a way to still your mind, you know, an awareness practice, you know, what have you, whatever you need so you can flourish and grow. And I think that's ideally what we're trying to do, is provide people with as many techniques and practices they can use to help them grow and flourish. And then they start loving themselves. Then they start seeing themselves in everyone and everything. So they start extending more, and just about me and my block, but it's about everyone and everything in the whole world. And then the whole universe, you know, and then they start seeing themselves stardust and, you know, like aspects like that where they grow. And then that love and that energy that they're emitting is making an impact in the entire universe. It's really a blessing. It's beautiful to witness and to experience it. It really is.
Mm. I think to build off of what Andy was saying also, one thing that's really cool is just like, yeah, like when she was in elementary school, you know, she stopped it, like the practice meditation helped her not punch the other girl in the mouth. But the beauty of this stuff is like, you know, it's a lot of people look at it as, you know, a luxury, but it's a survival skill in some communities, just because, you know, when the kids get older, instead of them reacting to what somebody says to them, and, you know, not tries to peacefully resolve a conflict, and, you know, usually they try to resolve the conflicts with their fists. I think the beauty with, you know, our kids is they have this tool where it does, you know, allow them, give them a second to take a breath and respond to adversity, whether it's, you know, somebody out in the street, somebody at a job, some, like, you know, a police officer or something like that. Other, all these different people that they face, these tools are helping them not only just survive, but thrive in, you know, a community that is not really set up for them to succeed. You know, so, you know, with our kids, you know, it may start off as them, you know, being able to restrain themselves from punching somebody, but, you know, as they get older, you know, it helps them navigate the highs and lows of this human experience.
Yeah. And I think Atman's right about that survival thing. Cause I mean, I wish we could say that it was like a happy ending to every story with some of our students, but I mean, some of them are coming from some really, really rough situations where like they're dealing with their own trauma that they've been through, the secondary trauma of the things that are happening around them, and then just like the intergenerational trauma of being Black in America, you know what I mean? So there's like a lot that they're dealing with. And then it goes to like, you know, these skills are helping them survive, because there are kids that don't make it out. They do end up incarcerated, that'll call us or email us. Like there's one of our students that was in that same group from like 2002. I guess he joined us in 2003. That's incarcerated now, talk to him a lot on the phone. And, you know, like he still practices his breath work. He still meditates. And he says that's the only thing that's getting him through right now is those skills that he has. Because, I mean, you know, he's been sitting for a while. He still hasn't had a court date. He doesn't know what's going to happen. So he's kind of just been in limbo for 3 years. So it's just like, that's what's helping with his anxiety. That's what's helping him keep his peace of mind. So I think it really is a survival skill on so many different levels with a lot of the kids that we work with.
Fantastic. So where do you have a vision of where you're going, or is it just responsive? Like, because moving from schools to homeless shelters to, you know, indigenous tribes to, I mean, personally, I don't have any strategic plan myself. I'm the bane of many friends' existence. Like, why don't you make a plan? And I said, I don't know. You know, I just, like, somebody asked me to do something, it feels right, and I do it, you know, like.
Yeah, I think, Sharon, it was the three of us. It was very organic. It was one of those things where it could just be like, you know, we were just going with the flow. Like, it might be someone say, hey, do you guys want to do a project? I'm like, yeah, hell yeah, we'll do that. Or like, we're on our way to the Druid Hill YMCA to take our kids. And they're like, it's a nice day, let's go to the park. I'm like, okay, let's go to the park. So it was just like very, very organic and fluid. But I think just the amount of people that are involved with the Holistic Life Foundation now and just like the amount of people that we're reaching, we definitely have to be very intentional about what we want to do and how we want to do it. So I think one of the big things we have going on right now is this commitment through the Clinton Global Initiative. We're going to expand our Mindful Moment program to 5, maybe 6 new cities, depending on how things shake out. We're looking at Buffalo, Philadelphia, Madison, Dallas, Chicago, and what am I missing?
Richmond.
Richmond. I'm sorry, Rom. I know he's going to listen to this, but in Richmond. So, and it's going to look like us going in and training people to do our programs. We're going to do a research project with the Trauma Research Foundation. And like, I think that's going to help us to expand our satellite program, like we were mentioning on the Mohawk Reservation up in Akwesasne. So I think it's being very intentional about finding places that where we can get support and really kind of make things stick. And also getting some concrete data behind it. That's why we're going to partner with Trauma Research Foundation to do some studies, because we know it works, but it's always good to have those numbers behind it so that mm-hmm. we can work on expanding more and more.
That's terrific. So I am wondering, just before we wrap up, if you would lead us, one of you would lead us in a short practice. I thought it was going to be you. How did I know
that? I'll gladly lead a practice. All right. This is going to be short and quick, but to the point. So if you're sitting in a chair, move to the edge of your seat, have your feet grounded, back, neck, and head aligned. If you're, you know, sitting down on the ground, just make sure your back, neck, and head is aligned. If you're laying down, same thing. Make sure your ankles aren't crossed. Arms by your side, palms facing the ceiling, and let's take a couple deep breaths together. I invite you to close your eyes if you feel comfortable. And everyone, inhale long, slow, and deep, filling your stomach up with air like it's a balloon, in through your nose. And exhale through your nose, push all that air out, letting your belly fall, eventually squeezing your belly button to your spine. Inhale deep again, long, slow, deep breath, filling your stomach up with air like it's a balloon, fill it all the way up. Exhale, let your belly fall, squeezing your belly button all the way into your spine, getting all that air out. Inhale deep one more time with that long, slow, deep breath through your nose, filling your stomach up with air like it's a balloon, fill it all the way up. And exhale, push all that air out, letting your belly fall, eventually squeezing your belly button to your spine. Now you can just breathe on your own at a nice natural pace. Don't put any effort into it. Just make sure you're breathing in and out through your nose. And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to pay attention to how the breath feels. Every time we inhale, we want to feel the air enter in through our nose and spread throughout our body on that inhale. Also on that inhale, we want to feel our belly rising. And with every exhale, we want to feel our belly falling and feel that air exit out of our body, out through our nostrils. So that's all we're going to pay attention to is how the breath feels. We're not going to pay attention to how our clothes feel on our body or how our bottoms feel on our chairs. All we're going to pay attention to is how the breath feels, the rising and falling of your belly, and the air entering and exiting our body through our nostrils. That's all we're going to feel. All right, next, we're going to pay attention to how the breath sounds. No matter how loud or how soft your breath is, you want to pay attention to how your breath sounds. And if you listen close enough, you'll notice that your inhale makes a unique sound and that your exhale makes a different sound. So once again, all we want to pay attention to is how our breath sounds. Once again, no matter how loud or how soft it is, all we're tuned into is how our breath sounds. Lastly, we want to focus our mind on the breath. And the way that we're going to do that is by focusing on how the breath feels and sounds. Once again, we're going to feel the rising and falling of our belly. We're also going to feel the air entering and exiting out of our nostrils. And we're also going to hear that breath. So once again, we're going to feel the breath and hear the breath. And, you know, if a thought does pop into your mind, because, you know, that's the nature of the mind, don't beat yourself up. Just acknowledge it and then ground yourself or anchor yourself back with the breath and then focusing your mind on the breath by listening to the breath and feeling the breath. All right, if your eyes are closed, you can keep them closed. We're going to slowly bring ourselves away from the breath and back to our bodies. So we can start off just by wiggling our fingers. Wiggle our toes. Roll your ankles and wrists. And you can either turn your neck from side to side, turn your head from side to side, or do a neck roll. Both ways, just stretch your neck out, whatever you want to do to stretch your neck out. And then whenever you get ready, no rush, you can slowly blink your eyes open and come back to your senses.
Well, thank you so much for the beautiful practice and for joining us today. It's great to see you guys again.
Yeah, we love you, Sharon, and miss you.
We love you so much.
I love you,
too. So good to see you.
To learn more about Ali Upman and Andy's work, visit www.hlfinc.org or letyourlightshinebook.com to get a copy of their book, Let Your Light Shine. Thank you.
Hey, folks. Thanks for listening. To learn more about Sharon's many different offerings, her courses, virtual classes, or to get a copy of Real Life, you can visit SharonSalzberg.com. This has been the Real Life series on the Metta Hour podcast, brought to you by the Be Here Now Network. May you be safe, may you be happy, may you be healthy, and may you live with ease.